And welcome back once again to the Endurance Hour podcast alongside the author of How to Swim Faster in 30 Days, Wendy Mader from T2Coaching.com. Wendy, what's going on? This is episode 257 and a two-part episode.
So this is part two of episode 256. We offered a free Skype consultation giveaway in the fall, and we are back again with Craig. In the first part, we talked mostly about running speed, how to progress from, you know, how to get faster, training for a 5K up to a marathon. And then we hung up that call, and he was like, wait a second, I didn't talk about triathlon. That's really what I wanted to talk about. So we got back on the call, which is what our recording, our interview is today. And we talked more about triathlon, going from a sprint to a 70.3, how to do that progressively, properly. And then we just talk about the sport of triathlon in general. He just started shooting questions at me that we weren't prepared for, but it was a really fun discussion on the sport of triathlon. I get to share some experience about what it was like back in the day when I started. And then I talk a little bit about what I call the Ironman Craze Society and how USA Triathlon is focused on the beginners now. There's an initiative out there for beginners and sprints and kind of going back to grassroots. We talk about the importance of local races and supporting the local races, and you know, you'll have to listen to hear more.
Now, maybe you want to take some notes or press pause. If you hear something very interesting or something that sparks a question for yourself along your triathlon journey or endurance journey, press pause and either send us an email, endurancehour@gmail.com, endurancehour@gmail.com, or send us a voicemail, and you can do that from your phone if you want, or go to your laptop or desktop. Go to speakpipe.com/endurancehour and send us a quick voicemail based on this episode and reference the episode, or, hey, I just heard Craig and Wendy talking. Here's my question, and you got 90 seconds, 90, and let us know what you think. So when you listen to this episode, press pause or take some notes and give us a follow-up question. So here it is, part two of our interview with Wendy and Craig.
It's pertained to the Sprint Plus triathlon because eventually, like I was saying in my pre-information that you got, I wanted to do the Sprint Plus, and then I want to do the Olympic and the Half Ironman, which is just across the water from you in Victoria.
Okay.
And they've, in their 73 or 70.3, they've just added a pro division, and it happens to be on the same weekend as our marathon here.
Okay.
They kind of encroached on our weekend because of the pro division, and they're not about to change it. So my goal is eventually to go from doing this this race here to do a half Ironman either next year or 2 years from now. But I want to progress up slowly. I don't want to just jump from a Sprint Plus, even though I could do it, to a half Ironman.
And that's a good thing, because, again, like everyone already knows, I've been doing the sport for 26. I'm on my 27th year. It should be a lifestyle. There's too many people out there that think triathlon means Ironman or 70.3. And triathlon is swim, bike, run. It's any distance. And so, like right now, I'm into really getting faster for my indoor triathlons that I discovered here at Lifetime Fitness in Georgia, which is a 10-minute swim, a 30-minute bike, and a 20-minute run. Like, to me, that's my motivation, is to work on my speed right now in the winter months and try to get faster, because I already know my endurance is there. I already know I can go all day long if I wanted to. I want to get faster. So the reason triathlon's been my lifestyle is I'm constantly able to change my goals each year, whether it's, you know, focusing on sprint distances up to Ironman distance races. I like the lifestyle of triathlon, so I encourage everyone to want to be on a slow progression and not be, you know, some people, there's going to be people out there that want the bucket list. That's fine, but
I mean, if you take it slow and you do it right, it is does become this lifestyle that you're going to keep doing. And again, do it healthfully, not be sidelined by illness or injury like I was when I started. I don't know how I've lasted this long, because when I actually had a really rough start, probably in year three for a few years, I had a rough go at the sport with illness and injury that I can't believe I'm still doing it, but it's pretty awesome. So you want to know how to progress from a sprint to a half?
Yeah, I didn't do a sprint. I jumped up to a sprint plus because that was the closest one that was, it was closest and most affordable to me right now, because I'm having to stretch everything umpteen million ways to, you know, between transportation and gear and all those type of things. You know, eventually I would like to get a tri bike, but right now I'm just using a nice road bike that's carbon and putting the extras on it, you know, to get me by.
So what exactly is a Sprint Plus?
A Sprint Plus is between a sprint and an Olympic.
An Olympic. Okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So when I am either coaching someone or the training plans that Dave and I created, I include like stepping stones as people are leading up to their, you know, generally first event. So I'm going to use our Couch to 70.3 example. It's a 20 or 24 week program. And in there, I include the first, I don't know, 8 or 12 weeks, you're building up to a 10K, and then you're building up to a sprint, and then you're building up to a half marathon. Because I think it's important to be able to do all these things before you actually do your first 70.3. And some people just do their first 70.3 or 140.6 as their very first event. But I think having those small stepping stones, those short-term goals, like a 5K, 10K, half marathon, Olympic distance, keep you keep the longevity of the sport in your lifestyle. So in your case, you know, let's set a date. Let's say you're going to do the 70.3 in September of 2019. You have plenty of time to train for it. And I would suggest, since you're already doing that, doing a couple more half marathons and getting really secure and really confident about the half marathon. Doing maybe, you know, we have, you know, it's February 2018, so you have plenty of time. Well, it's almost March. So you have a year and a half if you were doing it in September of 2019. Doing this year, doing a few Olympic distance events. You know, do a sprint or two, do an Olympic or two, so you can get confident and get some race experience with the shorter events. And then going into 2019, plan another maybe two Olympic distance events, maybe one or two half marathons, as a lead up to your 70.3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the half Ironman here, or actually across the water in Victoria, it'd be the first weekend in June.
Okay,
of next.
So you have a year and a couple months.
Yeah.
And that makes it harder. Doing those June 70.3s, especially in that area, doesn't allow for a lot of local sprints or an Olympic distance races because it's so early in the season. So this year I'd get, you know, as much as you can afford to do locally, try to do as many Olympic distances as your schedule allows, you know, two to three or I probably not more, but maybe two to three. Do some in the fall of this year. So now we're talking September, October, November, December of 2018. Maybe train for another half marathon. Do a half marathon in the summer and then do another one in the fall. And then do another one in the spring of 2019. Again, as lead up events to your first half. I think doing events like that give you confidence. It keeps you on a training plan. So you're not just always training for a half marathon or you're always training for triathlon. You're kind of juggling it. I like to do my, I like to train in the summer. So I like to do my longer endurance-based training in June, July, and August again, it all depends on what I'm training for, but I just like to be outside in the summer. So I save my long training for summer and I do shorter events in the fall and winter. Like right now, my main event is a half marathon in March, and then I'm going to do a half Ironman in June. And then this year, I don't know what my schedule is going to be like after that. But again, I think multi-sport is awesome because you have that. You can do a run focus, you can do a swim focus, you can do a bike focus training plan. Because you have, roughly 16 months until the Victoria 70.3. So there's a lot of ways, a lot of things you can do from a training plan perspective to prepare you mentally and physically for your first 70.3.
Well, I was thinking about maybe, there's one down in Portland in, I believe, later part of September, mm-hmm. that I could do as an option. I also possibly, if I wanted to, I could maybe go do the Coeur d'Alene 70.3, but that's a pretty tough one.
When's that? That's in August?
That's in August, yes.
You would do that this year?
No, it would be
next year.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's a hard one, but I think that's why I say it's a good one, because it's a little bit challenging. It's not the most challenging course, but it's got some challenge to it because it's hilly. It could be really, really hot too.
Yeah, it's similar. I think it's similar to Whistler.
Uh-huh.
I have a couple friends that are running a local program here that went and did Whistler last year, 70.3.
So on that note, when you're planning a race, whether it's June or August, September, I mean, that's a big difference. So the idea is to loosely solidify the race plan, the race date. That's always can change. But once you have the race date, then I like to work backwards and say, okay, if my race is in June, this is what I need to do in the springtime. And then to prepare for my springtime training, this is what I need to do in the winter to prepare my body to be able to train for the springtime up until June activity. And then, okay, this is my winter training. What's going to be my fall training? What's going to be my pre-summer training, the summer before my summer race? So working backwards often helps. That's what I do as a coach athlete, is I like to set the race date, and then I like to plan, the taper, the build, the base, the preparation. Let's say that's 4 to 6 months long. And then anything before that is a completely different season. We're talking the season right now. March of 2018 roughly is preparing you for the summer of 2018. Summer's generally when most people race, whatever you're going to race. And then, you take a little bit of downtime in the fall at the end of your season. And then the winter is usually you're kind of like your cross training / preparation to prepare you for 2019. And then you kick off your 70.3 training. Roughly if you've been training this whole time and you don't really take a lot of breaks, I would devote, 3 to 4 months of focused 70.3 training. So that could start in February of next year, or that could start in whatever, May of next year, depending on which race date you decide you want to do. That doesn't mean you stop training. That just means your specific race preparation is going to be 12 to 16 up to maybe 20 weeks for the 70.3. And I say that because I know you're someone who's constantly active. You're not someone who's going to say, okay, I'm going to do my half marathon and take 3 months off. I like to always be in a constant state of fitness, have this baseline level fitness year round. So then when I decide, okay, I'm going to focus on sprints, this is what my training plan is going to be like. If I want to focus on Ironman, since I have this base fitness, this is where my training is going to lead me. So the race usually dictates the path I take with training, whether it's more volume or more intensity.
Okay.
Did that confuse you?
Oh, no, it didn't.
Okay.
one of my goals here, because of the weather being so iffy a lot of the time, as far as running is not a problem, but biking, and of course swimming isn't a problem because I just use the pool. But eventually I would like to create a facility with a swim spa and a nice treadmill, and a setup with a bike with Zwift.
Yeah.
With a nice screen mounted on the wall, and invite other people that want to do the same thing to come in and utilize something like that in the winter months where they can't get out and do it outside.
Right. That seems to be what people do these days. And I think a lot of people now, myself included, I train indoors year round. I try to get outside on the weekends just for safety. I used to live in Colorado. I live in Georgia now. The roads aren't as safe where I live. So I got the CompuTrainer, which is a smart trainer, and I don't mind staying inside because I know I'm a lot safer inside. And then on the weekends, I pack my bike in the car and I go out in the country and I ride all day. It's beautiful. So I think that's a great way to have a setup, is to make sure you have that good bike and good bike trainer indoors for the winter.
Sure.
And that's a lot of athletes these days will work on what's called functional threshold power. So for those athletes who train with power, they'll spend a lot of time riding specifically. They'll do a bike focused training where they won't really be swimming and running much, but they'll be primarily on their bike during the winter trying to increase their functional threshold power. So their purpose of that, 3 to 4 months is cycling, power. So when spring rolls around and they're ready to ride outdoors again, they're at a higher threshold because they've spent so much quality time indoors.
Speaking of that, I was going to ask you a question, what you think about this. I've heard a lot of people in your level talk about this issue, and they tend to, when you're talking about triathlon in particular, they seem to emphasize the biking part of it because it kind of according to what they've seen and the what they've experienced with their workouts and helping and coaching other people, that the bike seems to be the foundation of both the running and the swimming. If you can put more time into your biking, that it will help your running and your swimming. If you're a little bit, if that's not your strong point.
Right. Good question. Good comment. So biking's just that bigger percentage of the sport. Even in a sprint, the biking is the longest. So that's where you should be spending more of your time. Again, depends on your goals. But if you're training for triathlon, you're going to be spending a higher percentage of your time on the bike. Biking, in my experience, again, I can't say what the research and the data these days will tell you, but my bike fitness helps my running. So I've had plenty of injuries over the years where I couldn't run, but I've never not been able to bike. And I know my biking fitness and cadence, doing various cadence drills, low cadence drills, high cadence drills, has helped my running legs, where even though I'm taking time off running, I still have those strong legs from my bike and the strong cardio base to be able to still run fairly decently, even with time off. So that's another reason why cycling should be a stronger focus, because it does carry over into running, whereas I don't see running carrying over into cycling. I spent 2 years training for ultras, and I didn't really spend hardly any time on my bike. And this was 2012 and 2013, and I missed the bike. So in 2014, I'm like, okay, it's time for me to get back on my bike. And I was way off where I left off in 2011. Like my bike fitness had really was really non-existent when I started biking in 2014. And so that's actually when I got a power meter, because I knew I needed a toy and something to motivate me and something to get my bike fitness back on track. So even though I was running, you know, 50-mile trail runs and my legs were super strong from running, I didn't feel like that translated into the bike at all. But I do feel cycling translates to running. As far as swimming goes, I'm a swimmer. Most triathletes aren't. I think the only way to get stronger in the swimmer is to swim. I think the cycling obviously helps with your cardiovascular system, but it doesn't help you with swimming. Does that answer your question?
It does. I used to be a competitive swimmer for 15 years plus when I was younger, so Swimming isn't hard for me.
Right.
I know, going back to the Sprint Plus that I did last year, I registered late, so they put me in the third pod, and I had to take and fight my way all the way through I was at the beginning of the third pod, I had to fight my way all the way through the second pod, and I caught the back end of the first pod before I got out. So I spent a lot of my time and energy weaving in and out of people, trying to get ahead of them. So hopefully this year they'll put me in the first pod, and that won't slow me down.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So on that note, we swimmers don't have to train a lot in the water, so we can afford to put more time on the bike and the run. I always choose the putting more time on the bike. That, relative to my competitors, cycling is my weaker link. When I'm healthy and running, I'm a really strong runner. When I'm injured, I'm not. It's a mental thing. But cycling is something that I'm constantly, you know, putting a lot more time into, because it's my weaker link and it's my favorite. So, you know, I'm doing something that's my favorite sport and I'm working on my weakness.
That makes a lot of difference.
Yeah.
I would say my weakest link would be the running. Swimming is not a problem. Biking, like yourself, I can do it for long periods of time, not get tired, not get worn out. Running, you know, I have to work at it. Even though I do well at it, I still have to work at it more than I would normally.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, 26 years later, almost 20 Ironmans later, a few marathons later, running is still mental for me. I thought it has to do with I've been injured a lot. I've been injured frequently over the last 26 years. And so it takes a lot of mental energy for me to put in the time running. When I'm healthy, I love to run. I want to run all day long. I love running when I'm healthy. And right now I'm healthy, so I'm really enjoying running. But I really have to be careful to, just because I feel good doesn't mean I should do more. I have to be very careful. And again, I'm a proponent of, if you love to do it, do it. And I do. But if I have a specific goal, I have to reel myself in and say, I'm training for this event. I don't need to do other training that's outside the scope of training for this event.
Yeah, I agree. It's I do enjoy running. Obviously, in a bike, you can get out and enjoy, you know, country roads and stuff like that, and go for quite a while. Versus running, you know, it's at a slower pace, of course, because you can't get to places as quick as you can a bike. But on both ends, you still can enjoy, you know, where you're choosing to train at.
Right. Running's great because you can do it anywhere. You just need a pair of shoes and you can go.
Correct.
But biking's great because you can get a lot farther faster.
Exactly.
What else?
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I think pretty much that is all I can think of. You know, as far as nutrition goes, I have my coffee in the morning. I take my my protein drink, and I also take another little, it's called Impact Edge.
Mm-hmm.
And I do all that in a shaker bottle in the morning before I actually eat or do anything else. Then I drink some other water on top of that afterwards. And then I, you know, if I'm going to go out and train, I won't eat anything until I come back. Mm-hmm. But I get those, I take that in the morning before I go and swim or run or go biking or whatever, and then I'll come back and eat afterwards.
Good. I think the most important component of nutrition for an endurance athlete is what they eat afterwards and making sure they replenish post-training for recovery purposes so they have the fuel to be able to sustain a training session, maybe another one that day or another one the next day. So it sounds like you're on a good system with that. I'm someone who eats like every 3 hours, so I like to do the, you know, small, frequent snacks, meals throughout the day. Some people are more successful at the, you know, three meals. That's all they do. And it just depends on your body and what you're used to.
Well, if you're in tune with your body, you can usually gauge if you're out doing just a normal routine workout versus something that's more high intensity, you can understand your body a little bit more. Mm-hmm. That you might need a little extra mm-hmm. afterwards,
right?
Whether it's liquid or whether it's nutrition or whatever.
Totally agree. And you just learn by doing. I'm yes. Someone, you know, I learn everything. I learned everything I know today pretty much by doing it. There weren't a lot of triathlon books or sources back in the day. So I just learned it all on my own, trying to figure it all out. And, it worked out for me. And then, you know, you started, you know, reading triathlon books. I think 1997 was the first time I actually read a real triathlon book. It was Joe Friel's cycling training Bible. He didn't have the triathlon training Bible out, which now he has two editions of. And that's where I learned my information. And that's kind of where I base my coaching and my training off of, is the Joe Friel periodization model. And he was such an influence on my start as a triathlete that I kind of still follow his rules. But yet I also know every athlete I coach is different, and they don't always mold to his philosophy and his training style. So I always have to make sure I'm up to date with, well, what else is out there? Who's doing what? What's the latest and greatest nutrition bar or gel or liquid, you know? Because I know, and some athlete's going to approach me and say, what do you think about this? So I want to make sure I've either tried it or I have enough knowledge to understand what they know.
Well, they have to use it in their training and see how it works for them.
Yeah.
It may work completely different for you versus them.
Yeah.
It's important to get feedback on both ends.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So your background is running? Is it running or is just swimming?
Swimming.
Okay. When did you start running?
Running, I played baseball as well as I did swimming in high school and earlier. So that's where my running, I ran 1 year of track in high school.
Okay.
I ran my own 2 mile mm-hmm. and I lettered in it. So
cool.
Running back then wasn't a problem. I didn't make the high school team, but you know, it was because of my hitting part. Mm-hmm. It wasn't because of the running and the fielding part.
Right. Cool.
So.
And then when did you start cycling?
Cycling, obviously, you know, when I was a kid, you know, I would just go out and ride bikes. But as far as cycling, probably a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
When I got a nice bike, you know, a nice carbon fiber bike that you can pick up with your finger. So it's nicer on the long runs where you're not trying to lug around a big, heavy, bulky old bike, which I had before. Uh-huh. So
cool.
Yeah.
So what else? Any other questions?
There's a gentleman that I've been following on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
And he went down to the conference in Arizona for USA Triathlon,
mm-hmm.
which was tied in with the Ironman program. Mm-hmm. And they just came out with a new website for, you know, beginners wanting to get into triathlon,
mm-hmm.
Pertaining to, you know, the Ironman philosophy. And I was wondering what you thought of that, if you looked at the website and
yeah, is that I can try initiative, I think it might be.
Correct.
Yeah, I got an email about that a couple weeks ago. And I thought it was from the World Triathlon Corporation. World Triathlon Corporation puts on Ironman. USA Triathlon is the governing body of really all triathlon. ITU as well as they sanction the Ironman events. I think it's a good initiative. I mean, that's kind of what, you know, Dave and Erickson and I have been doing a lot of programs, beginner oriented, including a lot of beginner type resources. So we've been doing those resources that I looked at. I'm like, oh, we've been doing that for a couple of years. So I'm a fan of any program that's tailoring towards beginners. Especially, there's so much information out on the web. I mean, you can Google anything endurance triathlon related, and you're going to come up with, you know, a handful of answers to the question. It can be really confusing. So I think having a source of people, a source that people trust to just kind of stick to one source is important. And like I said, there's so many, triathlon still is growing. I mean, I've been doing this. This is my 27th year. It's still growing, I think, exponentially. So I think it's important to have, like I said, have a place to go for information that's not so overwhelming.
I agree. I noticed that they discuss this quite in large length down at the conference. And I watched some more information about that,
mm-hmm.
that triathlon as a whole, and particularly in the Ironman arena, has taken a bigger chunk of triathlon and whole, and unfortunately, in the main looking at the whole picture,
mm-hmm.
has gotten more people involved in the Ironman philosophy and the events that are tied into that, and has pulled people out of their local events more so, and they're trying to find a way to remedy that.
Yes.
To not let the local triathlon kind of wither up and go away because of the emphasis of Ironman, you know, popping up all over the place.
Yes.
I was wondering what you and your co-host think about that.
Yes, I'm so glad we're talking about it. I've said probably the last like 10 years, we live in an Ironman crazed society. I mean, Ironman has exploded. When World Triathlon Corporation took over Ironman North America, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago, Ironman North America was a corporation of five, maybe seven events. And then World Triathlon came in and kind of swallowed Ironman North America. And then every year they kind of introduce a new Ironman as well as 70.3 in a different region of the country, now around the world. That's when I'm like, oh my God, we're just such an Ironman crazy society. Why does everyone have to do an Ironman? So when people talk to me all the time, I want to do an Ironman, my first question is, why? You haven't even done a triathlon yet. Why do you want to do an Ironman? And a lot of it is accomplishment. And I'm like, just doing a triathlon is an accomplishment, not doing the Ironman. And so I've seen, I'm going to use, living in Colorado for 21 years, when Ironman, so Colorado had just had some really good local races. They had a company called 5430 Sports. My friend Barry Siff put it on. It was a sprint, an Olympic. And the Olympic happened to be Boulder Peak, which is pretty famous. And they had a half iron distance. A few years ago, I don't know, maybe 5, 6, 10 years ago, Ironman came in and they purchased the Boulder Triathlon Series. And it was such a disappointment because the Boulder Triathlon Series was locally owned and it was such a great event. And then Ironman came in and they not only took over the half and called it a 70.3, they took over the sprint and an Olympic. And it never made sense to me why the corporation, WTC, all of a sudden was swallowing all the sprints and Olympics. In my mind, they should just stick to halves and fulls. So that was disappointing to see that local series turn over to World Triathlon Corporation. And in my perspective, I've just been doing the sport for so long. I know what it used to be like, and I know where it's at now. And then looking at local races like Loveland Lake to Lake in Colorado, that, oh my God, that is just such, I mean, I would go back to race that and living in Georgia now. I would love to go back and race that event because it's, again, it's one of my favorites. But the numbers have really dropped in that race because everyone wants to do an Ironman. And again, triathlon is a lifestyle for me. Whether I do sprints or Ironman, I like to mix it up. And I want people who are getting into the sport to do the same thing. You know, progress to your Ironman. Do some sprints for a year. Do some Olympics year two. Do some halves year three. Maybe your fourth year in the sport, do your first Ironman. I just think it's better for your body, your mind, your life to start small and grow from there.
And less injury.
Yes. And I think just more enjoyable. I mean, you know, I had a great event last year. I had a good why that I wanted to do Kona last year in 1997 or in 2017 because it was my 20th anniversary since my first one. But now I'm kind of like, oh gosh, I'm just so glad I can still do the sport because I don't want to do an Ironman. I want to do something else. And I can because there's so many things involved in doing triathlon, swim, bike, run, sprint, Olympic, half full. There's non-sanctioned Ironman distance races you can do that are called just half Ironmans. So I think it's a really good initiative and kudos to USAT for jumping on that. And having said that, I do have a love-hate relationship with Ironman because I do like doing Ironman. I do like doing WTC events. I do want to go to Kona again. It's just so corporate that that's why I have a hard time with it.
I agree. And obviously my big long-range goal is to actually go to Kona and do the Ironman. Mm-hmm. Somehow, some way, whether I have to qualify or pay or do the various ways or go get into the lottery or
legacy
whatever
program. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think every triathlete does. I don't think I've ever met a triathlete who doesn't want to do Ironman and Kona. Who wouldn't? I think it's awesome. I think everyone should have a chance to experience it. However they get there, you know, I think it's awesome. But I also think it's important to support the local events and make sure they don't go under and that they're still thriving because that's where it starts. It starts locally and it starts small. And it starts at the, and it's age groupers, you know. It's not just a professional sport. It's the age groupers make up the sport of triathlon.
I agree. And speaking of that, I did 2 years ago, I started a duathlon. Mm-hmm. I was a race director for a local duathlon in my area. But unfortunately, last year, because of lack of volunteers, I had to cancel it, which was very sad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm still not losing that hope of doing it later on. But I just have to build up my base. Mm-hmm. I know that even our local marathon, the last couple of years, they had to put ads in the papers to try to get volunteers to fill spots. Mm-hmm. And they've been going for, this year will be the 16th year that they're doing the race here locally. Mm-hmm. So that's always been a problem in smaller areas like this, is trying to get quality volunteers that aren't burnt out.
Right.
overdoing it for so many years and saying, I want to do something else. You're going to have to find somebody else. And then eventually it just kind of trickles down, and try to get the new people in, to get them involved, give them small things to do so they don't get burnt out. Mm-hmm. So it's not so time consuming for them each year with that particular event.
Yeah, I think what worked, I was a race director for a local sprint in Colorado. We always donated to the charity of choice. We always donated to their charity to have volunteers. And we always had, we had like 40 volunteers, and it was just a sprint. The big company in Colorado now, Without Limits, they let athletes volunteer for race entries. And that's how, that's been very successful. You know, you volunteer for our race this year, you get to get an entry next year, or get an entry for a future race. I think that's a good way to do it too.
Yeah.
And I think every athlete, if you race, you should volunteer at least sometime in your life. If you're going to be one of those athletes racing, you need to volunteer at an event.
It's imperative that you support the sport, not only participating in it, but you need to look at the other facets of the people that put in the hours of work, the volunteers, as well as obviously the race directors and stuff like that, to put on the event. You show up, you do your thing, you know, you eat afterwards, you visit, and you go home. And but if you don't know what has happened on the other end, the hours and hours of preparation, when the event's over with, they're already starting to plan for the next year.
Right.
To make it a successful event, and trying to take and mix it up with different prizes, and trying to grow it, and mm-hmm. trying to keep the people that came the last year, keep them coming back, and also telling their friends, wow, I had a great time at this event, you should check this out. Mm-hmm. You know, those type of things.
Yeah, I mean, I never really knew what it was like until I was a race director. And as soon as those entry fees start coming in, we start spending money on porta-johns, yep. right, the venues, the police, yep. the traffic control. That mm-hmm. is why we have a no refund policy, is because we start spending that money as soon as we start getting it.
And that's a big expense, trust uh-huh. me.
Yep, I know.
I know I said this last week or last episode, Wendy, but it's really fun to hear you talk with these athletes. I feel like I'm the fly on the wall who's getting a front row seat to a really good discussion, and it sparks ideas in my head of like, oh yeah, or I used to be in that spot, or it might give me another idea for a question. And if you have the same thing on your mind of, I want to ask Wendy this, or I wish she would have gone into more detail about that topic, send us an email, endurancehour@gmail.com. Or again, voicemail, so simple, and helps our podcast with a more variety. Speakpipe.com/endurancehour. It's a free app that you have on your phone, laptop, or desktop. You press record, and you got 90 seconds to record whatever you want, and then we can use that audio clip on the podcast in the future. So use those two options if you have any follow-up questions based on this interview or a discussion you want us to get into more detail in the future. And you said Craig is looking to make the jump to the 70.3 distance?
Yeah, so he's doing some sprints, and he wants to do a 70.3. So, you know, I laid out a progression that it's nice to do some sprints, jump into the Olympic distance, do a few races, do a couple half marathons, and then make that leap to a 70.3. And that's exactly how I laid out our Couch 2 series. So we did a Couch to 70. Dave and I created this Couch to 70.3 program that new this year, where within the program, we do 8 weeks to your first sprint. And then 12 weeks, you're building up to a half marathon. And then you're building up to an Olympic distance race before you do a 70.3. We also have a 16-week couch to sprint, where we build you up 5K, 10K, and then a sprint. A 16-week couch to Olympic, where we build you up to a 10K, a sprint, and then an Olympic. I've already talked about the half. Which is a 24-week program. And then we also have a 32-week Couch to Ironman plan. The reason I like these and the reason I created them is because, like I discussed with Craig, there are people at this day and age who do a 70.3 or 140.6 as their very first triathlon. Kudos to them. That's not necessarily what I would always recommend, but I did provide programs for these people who are interested in doing a little bit of progression and getting a little bit of experience before the big race. And then it's also a great program for people who maybe did the sport a few years ago. They've done maybe they've done a 140.6 or 70.3, but it's been a few years and they feel like they are coming off the couch again and they want to get into it. So much has changed. So we provided a lot of resources, a lot of education to get, you know, kind of updated stuff to get people there healthfully. And again, I think the progression is so important.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have all these plans. There's a link, of course, on endurancehour.com to some video introductions or previews to what the course is all about. So you can, you know, get an idea of, like, so you just tell me it's a couch to sprint, but what does that mean a little bit more? I want to see you guys talk about it. So we made some preview videos to talk about what's involved, but they're all on Training Peaks, which is a free software that anyone can sign up for. And the price you see on there isn't the price you necessarily have to pay, because we offer a 33% discount to anybody. Kind of have to listen to the podcast, so that's kind of the benefit for you. If you go to endurancehour.com/33%, we show you the code that you can use to get 33% off any of the programs that we just discussed on Training Peaks. So to see that, just go to endurancehour.com. You'll see the link on the upper right hand that shows you the link to all these links to Training Peaks where you can find this stuff. But take advantage of that discount code. People are using it, saving, you know, lots of money by downloading these programs, and they all have great videos to them, and a lot of time and effort went into them. So we hope you appreciate it and take advantage of the discount code. Any final thoughts before we close up shop?
Maybe you already mentioned this, but that discount code is good for any of our programs. You can use it more than once.
Yes.
So once you have it, you have it. So don't feel like it's a one-time code, you know, because I know athletes who have used our 70.3 program, and then they've also purchased our 140.6. Some people do them back to back. They do the 70.3 plan the first part of the year, and then they do the 140.6 plan the second part of the year. So you can use that code anytime. It's not going to expire. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just another reminder to sign up for a newsletter, because we will be doing more free giveaways. We've done the Skype consult giveaway. We've given away 5 training plans of their 5 winners' choice. So being part of our newsletter, as well as listening to the podcast, you're going to be up to date on our next giveaway.
You couldn't have said it better. I couldn't have said it better. You did it perfect. So there you go. Everyone, thank you so much for this taking part in this 2-part series with Craig and Wendy, episode 256 and 257. We'd love to have you on in the future, whether it's your voice or your email questions, or maybe you will be involved in a Skype consult in the near future. That'll do it for Wendy Mader. I'm Dave Erickson. Thanks for listening this week. Have a great week of training, racing, or recovery. We'll see you next time. Adios.
Adios.
Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere. Sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young. There's more fears and lost, that's all. Hopes I'm big and you see for little souls. Last night they loved you, opening doors and pulling some strings. Walk luck and you looked in time. Never look back, walk tall, act fine.